Welcome back to the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness. I'd like to welcome our next guests, Noel Grease and Monica Nogueira, authors of the IBM Center Report, Food Safety, Emerging Public-Private Approaches. Noel Grease, what prompted your research in this area of food safety?
Well, I guess in a word, it's China. I'm the co-director of a joint center with Tsinghua University in Beijing, the Center for Logistics and Enterprise Development. And I had been in China when the melamine scandal broke. I don't know if you recall, but back in 2008, there was a big contamination of melamine and milk products in China just prior to the Olympics. The melamine had been added to the milk supply to increase its protein content, or to make it appear that its protein content had been increased, and with pretty enormous consequences in terms of infants who suffered kidney disease and a number of deaths. We were in China working on developing cold chain capabilities. The cold chain is a supply chain that has temperature control capabilities so that you can keep food and other perishables at a constant temperature. And right after that, when I got back to the U.S., the PCA peanut contamination surfaced here in the U.S., and we became very interested in the comparative aspects of food safety regarding regulatory environments, different types of contamination, responses to it, and things like that.
Monica Nogueira, would you describe the current landscape of food safety?
It is difficult to estimate the true extent of food safety disease, but it can be safely be said that foodborne disease occurs more frequently than it is reported, and it incurs more costs than there are estimates for. In the last 10 years, we have had more than 20 major food contamination events that made thousands of people severely ill with very high health and economic costs. These events are distributed across many types of food products, but contaminations of meat, poultry, and fresh produce are the most prominent. We see that there are increasing opportunities for food contamination and that the cost for food contamination events are also increasing. And we think that one of the roots of this problem is the fragmentation of the U.S. food safety system, as well as the lack of authority of our regulatory agencies to mandate recalls, the inadequacy or inexistence of traceability systems and the food supply chain. In the last 20 months, we had four new food safety bills introduced into Congress to address this problem. So this is a problem that it really worries not only government but the public too. These four bills are the Food Safety Modernization Act, which was introduced in February 2009 and called for the creation of a new administrative agency within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Service. But this bill remains in committee. And then we had, in June 2009, the Food Safety Enhancement Act that was passed in the House of the Representatives by a vote of 283 against 142. And it has moved to the Senate, has been read twice, but has not been voted yet there. And this bill would increase the authority of the Health and Human Services, which houses the FDA, but will not create a new agency. And then we have two other bills that have been introduced into the Senate. And the first one is the FDA Food Safety Modernization Act, which is very similar to the Food Safety Enhancement Act, as well as the Safe Feast Act. And these are all similar to the Food Safety Enhancement Act.
No, Monica touched on a couple of reasons for why we are seeing an increase in food contamination. Perhaps you'd like to elaborate. Are there any other reasons besides fragmentation?
We really don't know the true extent of foodborne disease here in the U.S. People may have a mild gastrointestinal distress that it's due to some kind of food contamination, and they don't go to the doctor, they don't report it. So we have no way of knowing, but we do believe it is quite extensive and really deserves and merits additional attention from the regulatory environment. Salmonella, for example, is probably a lot more frequently experienced than is reported. That said, we do believe that it's increasing, and for two reasons. First is the increasing complexity of the global supply chain and also the increasing vulnerability of our population to these kinds of contaminations. from the supply chain side, we have more and more people who want fresh produce and foods that don't go through a heating or a pasteurization process. They're not canned or packaged. And this provides a lot more opportunity for contaminants to enter into the food system or into the product. And even more important probably is that many of our products are imported. They cross our borders, often from developing countries, and they often don't have very strong food safety controls like we do. And countries like China don't have cold chains either. So you have food products that are moving from the farm or the manufacturing site, the processing site, to the customer without any temperature control. In fact, in China, most meat is transported in an untemperature-controlled environment. So we have, you know, people buying more fresh produce. We have more products coming from overseas. These products are traveling farther, so they have more transport legs. And each time you transfer from one mode of transport to another, you have an opportunity for some kind of contamination. So, you know, the complexity of the supply chains really are contributing to the increasing food contamination. And another problem also, you know, with air transport and air cargo, contaminated food can travel across the world in a couple of hours, and it's very difficult to track and trace something.
That's a wonderful segue. One of the things I found most powerful with your report for the IBM Center for the Business of Government was the economic and health costs associated with food contamination. Perhaps you can give us a sense of that, and how much at the end of the day does all of this cost?
Well, we can look at both the economic and health costs. The available estimates from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are already 10 years old, but they can provide an idea of the costs involved. And they say that 76 million people are affected by foodborne disease every year in the United States. From these, 325,000 are hospitalized, and we have 5,000 deaths. So from the human perspective, it's a huge cost right there. The USDA Economic Research Service tracks and estimates the cost of disease caused by specific pathogens, and they have created a cost calculator, a foodborne illness cost calculator they introduced in 2003 that is an interactive online cost estimator for five top pathogens. And when they computed the cases of salmonellosis, which is the illness caused by the Salmonella bacterium, in 2008, it came to approximately $2.6 billion. So we have a much more recent estimate done in March 2010 by Robert Scharf, a former FDA economist, and it puts the cost of foodborne disease in the U.S. to be as high as $152 billion. This amount does not only include medical costs, but it includes also the cost of premature death, lost productivity costs, and also public health costs related to the tasks of detecting, responding to an event. And many of these costs fall to local communities and to the states. On the economic side, we see that foodborne disease impacts companies, industry, and regional economies in a very substantial way, and the effects are very lasting. The calculus is very tricky, and we do not have a final tally yet, but if we take the Peanut Corporation of America contamination as an example in 2008, it has been estimated that this event alone cost nearly $1 billion. The Kellogg Company estimated that its loss would be around $75 million for that event.
Would you give us a high-level overview of how the food safety system currently operates?
So in terms of the complicated structure, there are 15 different agencies and more than 30 different laws that govern food safety at the federal level. And right now, if you sort of try and look at the landscape of the regulatory bodies, the major tasks are divided between the FDA and the USDA. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, oversees about 80% of our food supply, including imported foods that come into our country across borders. And the USDA, or really its FSIS, or Food Safety and Inspection Service, is responsible for the remaining 20%, and that includes meat, poultry, and processed egg products. There are a number of other agencies. The CDC, for example, I think Monica mentioned them earlier, has responsibility for surveillance and epidemiological activities to confirm and monitor and manage foodborne disease outbreaks. You know, the EPA, Department of Homeland Security, because remember, food safety also has a homeland security and terrorism aspect to it as well. They're also involved in food safety. So we have a very complicated structure at the federal level. But in all honesty, the bulk of the food safety work really happens at the local and the state levels. We have thousands of local health departments and various state departments of public health and agriculture all engaged in data gathering and analysis, inspections of various stakeholders and suppliers along the food supply chain.
Would you provide an overview of the collaborative framework you outline and recommend in your IBM Center report?
Monica and I are members of the Keenan Institute of Private Enterprise here at University of North Carolina's Business School. And our mission here is to solve problems by engaging the private sector, the public sector, and the academy. And I think the public-private aspect of food safety is emerging. I think it's being recognized that we can't necessarily rely just on the public sector, on the FDA and the USDA to help keep our food safe. We've been talking about a new stakeholder model that includes not just the public sector agencies, but also the private sector and also the consumer, who all have roles to play in keeping our food supply safe. Private sector on its own is also engaging in industry-wide efforts to alert suppliers and customers up and down the supply chain if problems are emerging. And it's in their interest that, you know, private sector companies want to maintain their brand. They want to maintain the safety of their products. So it's in their interest as well. These sort of collaborative approaches are really the way to go in the future. And the laws that are coming down also reflect this. One of the things that's emerging out of the new legislation is this idea of risk-based approaches to managing food safety. This says that we'll put resources towards food safety where the risks are greatest. And for private sector companies, this means that if you do not have many violations and if you're not operating in a food industry that has a potential for a lot of contamination, then you probably do not have to be inspected as frequently, which is less of a burden to you. And together, there have been a number of meetings between government and private sector representatives to try and work out some of these risk-based approaches that make sense for both sides. And another area where the public and private sectors are coming together is in the area of track and trace. Track and trace, when we have a food contamination event, it's very important to be able to trace the supply chain back up to the source of the problem and also to track downwards to see where products may have gone that have been contaminated.
Monica, the consumer is where the buck stops, right? We are the ones who purchase the food. We are the ones who open the product and have a direct view of it. How key is consumer information to enhancing food safety in the United States?
Many states, including especially North Carolina, maintain today consumer hotlines where consumers can call and report any problems they find in their food. We have information from the North Carolina Department of Agriculture. They issued an alert because a consumer has called and indicated they found metal in lollipop, and that triggered a major investigation with the proximity of Halloween season and the consequence that it can have since this product is going to go to children. So we see that consumer information is key, is a key aspect for the food safety system. We are working towards using this information, integrating this information with other types of information that comes from the private sector and from the monitoring agencies, and try to use that information in an intelligent way so we can detect as soon as possible that a problem may be appearing. Another aspect that the consumers contribute to is in social media today, because consumers are increasingly talking to each other directly and sharing almost everything about their personal lives on the internet. And using different platforms like Facebook and Twitter and other sites like YouTube to share what they live, where they have eaten, what they have eaten, and how they feel afterwards. And the sharing of information, which is mostly public, is a great source of data that we can collect and use for kind of a detection mechanism to see where problems may be occurring.
Noel and Monica, what does the future hold in the area of food safety?
I do see a more collaborative spirit between the public sector and private sector in terms of providing protective mechanisms for our food safety, our food supply chains. And I do see in the future a food safety bill being passed. I think another area where we're making a lot of progress is in new informatics tools to provide visibility into our food safety systems. This is an area that Monica mentioned earlier. And we're actively building many of these tools here in our laboratories at the business school. How can we gather information? What's the right information to gather? How can we fuse that information and use it to detect signals about potential contamination events and then respond to that event in a timely manner? One of the problems has been the extreme latency between the time of a contamination and the time that last contaminated food product has been taken from the shelves of the grocery stores. And I think there are a number of new tools, information tools that are coming down the pike that will help us shorten that period.
I also would like to add that besides the information and the data collection, we will need new mechanisms, new devices to do this collection. There are some new devices that seem to promise to be able to smell your food for you and to tell you that it's getting spoiled. So I think that in this hardware area, there is also another possibility. It's still in very infancy, but I think we will see new things, new devices coming too.
That's a wonderful perspective, Noel and Monica, and I want to thank you for your time and more particularly for the great work you did for the IBM Center for the Business of Government.
It's been our pleasure. Thank you so much.
Partnerships between government regulators and industry evolved in the 1990s as a way of increasing compliance while reducing administrative burdens. Several recent high-profile cases have put into question the benefits of such partnerships. The three recent IBM Center reports profiled today offer a different perspective, showing the value of regulatory partnerships and collaboration between public and private sectors. I hope you've enjoyed this special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors exploring ideas to improving government effectiveness with Russ Mills, Dr. Cassandra Mosley, and Professors Noel Grease and Monica Nogueira. You may download a free copy of each report profiled on today's show, as well as all Center reports, at businessofgovernment.org. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.